This episode of Market Talk is brought to you by Growmark FS. Keeping up on the latest in ag is a challenge, to say the least, but there are experts nearby ready to help. You'll find them at your local FS. You can trust them to bring you customized agronomic grain and energy solutions born of the latest thinking. That's because FS specialists receive continuous training that keeps them current on the latest trends, practices, and technologies. So you'll get local expertise that's both exceptional and up-to-date. Visit fssystem.com to learn how FS is bringing you what's next.
Bringing you the ag information you need. This is Market Talk, produced by the American Ag Radio Network. Now, here's your host, Jesse Allen.
A mostly higher day seen in the market trade on Monday to start off the final week of July. Welcome to Market Talk. Thank you so much for joining us once again, making us part of your day today. I'm your host, Jesse Allen. Great to be here with you. As we saw, again, a mostly higher day in Monday's grain trade, with the wheat complex the leader to start through Sunday's overnight session into Monday morning, and then soybeans kind of took over the lead with great strength in soybean meal seen on Monday. Quarter wheat pretty much just following along with beans as we shifted through Monday's trade action. Well, we saw a fairly mixed activity in the protein sector, taking some profit out of hogs after a sharp run-up this past week in the hog market, as well as feeder cattle feeling a little pressure from higher corn prices, while fat cattle, live cattle traded their way a little bit higher. Fairly quiet outside markets on the day on Monday as we await the Federal Reserve meeting this week, expecting that 75 basis point rate hike from the Fed after they wrap up their two-day meeting on Wednesday. And so the outside markets fairly quiet to get things going here this week. While we watch the weather, of course, that is a big topic of conversation. We did see some rains over the weekend, but some areas didn't get the rains that were forecast, and we are expecting heat and dryness to come back into the market trade as well. Coming up in segment four, we're going to talk about all that with Eric Snodgrass of Nutrien. He will join us as we take a look at this week's weather forecast. Also coming up, we're going to talk market action with Dwayne Bussey of Bolt Marketing. He will be our guest analyst joining us here today. Right now, though, let's get caught up on a little bit of today's trade action with Arlen Suderman, Chief Commodities Economist at Stone X. He is back from vacation, and I start my conversation with Arlen asking what he's seeing standing out as the leading factors in the move to the upside in grains today.
I think first thing I'd look at is the fact that the VIX, Wall Street's Fear Index, traded at three-month lows over the last couple of sessions or so. The dollar has been at three-week lows or thereabouts. That has allowed the commodities to start trading their fundamentals once again. So as we look at those fundamentals, we've got some cool weather over the Midwest. Some areas getting some rain. That's the short-term outlook. Longer-term, though, we're seeing the ridge rebuilding back to the east again, back into the plains in the western Midwest as we get into the first week of August. How intense that high is going to be and how hot and dry it's going to be is going to hinge somewhat on a cyclone that's in the western Pacific right now. But as we look forward, we're seeing some weather premium being put back in the market. We do have the agreement with Ukraine to start exporting grain out of its ports. It's going to take some time for that to reach any significant level. There's still serious questions about insurance for those ships. The ships that are trapped in the ports will certainly get out or make attempts to get out. That will increase some grain flow short term, but whether those ships will feel comfortable coming back is the real test yet going forward. And so a little bit of skepticism coming back on that. So putting some weather risk back in, some Ukraine risk back into these markets, with things turning again today to the upside.
Arlen, I know as well we have the Fed meeting this week. Widely anticipate that 75 basis point rate hike, and I know the trade has their eyes on what's going to happen with the Fed this week as well.
Absolutely, it's going to be a factor. We're seeing some calming down of the waters in the outside market somewhat, having priced in a recession now, kind of waiting for the next step. The real key is going to be whether the Fed does anything to further calm those markets on Wednesday afternoon with their press conference and statement, or will they stir the waters again and get the markets worried that the Fed's going to either under-respond to what they need to do or overreact to what they need to do. That could stir up the outside markets one way or the other once again. But as long as nothing changes from the Fed, and they don't say anything to really worry the outside markets, we should be able to keep the grain and oilseed markets focused on their fundamentals once again.
And how about over in the livestock trade? A fairly bearish cattle on feed report was seen Friday, yet we see some strength in live cattle here so far on Monday with mixed to lower action in feeders and hogs. What are your thoughts of the protein sector?
Well, as we look at the cattle market, the USDA really confirming that as we go into next year, we're going to see declining numbers. The current numbers have really been priced into the market already. And in fact, if you look at where this market is trading, it's trading some optimism that we're going to see those tightening supplies coming up. We're seeing some good demand for product. Overall, in the pork market, we saw the big gains last week. So we're seeing a little bit of profit taking there in the nearby months. We're going to see now seasonally, we would tend to start seeing the numbers start to increase. We did see some weight loss because of the heat this week. We should regain some of that weight coming back in. And we should start to see some numbers increase again as we head into late summer, into the fall. But overall, we're seeing demand for the product be strong. Product has really been driving this. And because the numbers of hogs we've been slaughtering have been coming in below what USDA had projected.
And again, that is comments with Arlen Suderman, Chief Commodities Economist at StoneX, during my midday commentary with him. We release that every day on our podcast channels and more. And you could find that at markettalkag.com, the links there. And we always, of course, try to bring you Arlen's comments here during the first segment of our show each and every weekday. A few news items here in the world of agriculture. The National Corn Growers Association has launched a call to action asking advocates to submit comments to the EPA in response to the agency's announcement that they are revising the registration for atrazine. The EPA says it's amending the registration of this well-studied herbicide that allows farmers to do more with less. The new level of concern for atrazine will vastly reduce the herbicide's effectiveness and hinder farmers' ability to utilize a critical tool. NCGA President and Iowa farmer Chris Edgington says, quote, "Corn growers know the value of atrazine, and it's time again to tell the EPA how valuable this product is to our operations. In 2016, we came together to submit more than 10,000 comments to the agency, and we need that same momentum again," end quote. Now, NCGA points out that since it first came onto the market, atrazine has allowed farmers to increase their conservation tillage practices. Conservation tillage is a key to carbon-smart farming practices. Now, when EPA announced its June 30th proposed rule on atrazine, farmers took immediate notice of EPA's ultra-low level for atrazine. After examining the extensive documentation posted to the docket, the scenario has gone from bad to worse for growers of corn, grain sorghum, sugar cane, fruits, vegetables, and other crops that rely on atrazine, according to a release from the Triazine Network. In a published decision that concluded the registration review of atrazine in 2020, EPA set the aquatic level of concern at 15 parts per billion. If the proposed rules adopted, over 72% of U.S. corn acres would be out of compliance based on a model used to predict which areas would exceed the new strict atrazine limits. Now, according to Greg Krissick, Triazine Network co-chairman and Kansas Corn Growers Association CEO, he said, quote, "It's bad enough EPA is playing politics by reopening the finalized re-registration for atrazine with proposed levels not supported by credible science. Now we learn the agency would enforce restrictions using an unbelievable modeling system that would put 72% of all U.S. corn acres out of compliance. This is clearly a case of agency overreach," end quote. This is a story we're going to continue to follow very closely here on Market Talk. Well, coming up, we're going to talk about the market trade with Dwayne Bussey of Bolt Marketing. He joins us next as we're back with more Market Talk right after this.
The market news and analysis you need here on Market Talk. Now, back to Jesse Allen.
And joining us now to take a look at Monday's trade action as we get into the final week of July, we say hello and welcome in our good friend Dwayne Bussey of Bolt Marketing joining us here today. Dwayne, great to have you on the show, sir. I hope you're doing well.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me, Jesse.
Well, we got plenty to talk about here, Dwayne, and I think just for starters, a really solid day across the board in grains. Bean meal ended up kind of being the bullish star of the show, leading beans, but all three, corn, soy complex, wheat, all strong. Good way to come back and start the week, and then there's a lot of issues, of course, out there. It feels like a lot of this kind of got started with the weekend news about Russia, Ukraine, that bombing of Odessa. That seemed to maybe give us a little bit of that bullish momentum, at least to start here with the weekend headlines, Dwayne.
Yeah, it did. Yeah, as you mentioned, you know, Friday we signed this deal with Russia, Ukraine, that they're going to allow exports out of the Ukraine, right? And the whole time I was thinking, there's no way. And, you know, but sadly, you know, there's come Saturday, actually, I think it was just hours afterwards, they ended up bombing Odessa. And now, you know, there's talk of, you know, it wasn't, you know, the area where they actually ship grain. It was where they brought in some missiles from the U.S., but whatever talk. But kind of frustrating because it felt like I knew that would happen. But to trade the wheat market on Friday, you just got rolled over like I did because it was down hard. And then this news breaks over the weekend. But back to your question, Ann. Yeah, that's what started the rally last night. So it's nice to see. I think all the grains kind of took their turn at leading this up today. It was wheat overnight. Today, I'd say the wheat close is a little disappointing. It up only 10. And then, like you said, soybean meal really was strong all day. Soybean oil fell back. But then corn kind of rallied into the close, too. So they all kind of took their turn. I don't know, Jesse, if it's really a huge bullish story going on, or is it just for once the funds then step in and sell? I guess we'll figure that out in a few days here.
I think we will, too. And, looking at how things unfolded over the weekend, it was kind of the case of the haves and the have-nots again. So I don't know if we could point to weather necessarily being the reason to move to the upside, but there were plenty of areas that did get a nice rain and plenty of areas who didn't get much in the way of any rainfall that needed over the weekend, Dwayne.
Yeah, you're right. And no one's getting heavy rains. Boy, you sure don't hear of anyone being too wet. So everyone's, even if you get the rain, you're just getting spoon-fed enough to kind of keep going. But yeah, there's obviously, this time of year, it's thunderstorms, so you get it or you don't. We got a nice rain up here in northeast South Dakota, so I feel like we're sitting good. But I know southeast part of the state has been hot and dry really all summer and missed out here. Now, this week, we're looking at cooler temps and rains going across Kansas, Nebraska, southern part of Illinois. So that'll be a nice change for them. They've been hot and dry as well. But yeah, it's going to be interesting to see a lot of hit and miss areas out there. But also, you know, you look at the calendar, I heard you mention, you know, last week in July, which about floored me, but it is. So that kind of closes the book on really the weather season when it comes to the corn market. Even if we end up hot and dry in August, the corn market doesn't like to rally after the July timeframe as far as a weather market anyway.
Well, and I've, you know, heard some of the same things you have. You mentioned parts of Southeast, South Central, South Dakota, Nebraska, Kansas, Missouri, Southern Missouri. You know, some of these areas that, you know, especially Missouri, Kansas, into Southern Illinois getting rain this week. But, you know, is it too little too late with some of that corn crop? I'm very curious to see Monday afternoon's crop progress report to see if there are major reductions in some of those areas. But, you know, seeing the pictures on social media and hearing from guys and gals, some of that corn crop just got met at the wrong time with pollination and all that heat, and it's not looking the best, Dwayne.
No, it will be interesting this afternoon. You know, late last week, you start talking to people in the trade. We're thinking maybe a 3-4% drop in the crop conditions. And then I saw today the trade estimate is 1% drop. And so it might be a little bit worse than that, I would sure think. But it's so hard to gather. I do a crop tour every Monday morning, and the reporter out of Illinois and Iowa both were talking about above trend line yields for those two states. Well, that alone, I guess, Jesse, is enough for me to stay bearish and keep hedges in place, because those are two huge states. And it's just a math thing. You know, if they're both planting over 11 million acres of corn and North Dakota's at 3 million, it wouldn't matter what size crop North Dakota has, of course, to pull it down. So I agree with you. We're not going to have a 185, 186 national corn yield. So the top end's been taken off with these troubled spots. But yet it feels like if Iowa and Illinois are that good, then we're not going to have a disaster. It's not 2012. I don't think we're looking at a 172 for a national yield. I'm in the 177 to 180 range for now, but maybe the crop conditions will change my mind this afternoon.
Yeah, well, and you mentioned, you know, maybe still a little bearish keeping some of those hedges in place. I mean, you know, we look at the market right now, the futures, you know, kind of that 580, 590 range, 570s. You look at that, Dwayne, what are your thoughts here? Do you think we found our range maybe? Do we hold steady here? Does the market have a chance to run lower? Especially if Iowa and Illinois stay really, really good.
Right. Probably yes to all of the above. It's possible. I'm looking at 590 as an area we might bounce back up to in Dees Corn. We had an opening print there last Thursday, and that just kind of feels like a good spot to maybe go back and test. And then after that, to me, will be the true test of this market, I guess. Are we going to go back down and make new lows because we got some more expected rains in those key states we mentioned, or like you said, are we finally creating a bit of a sideways pattern down here? And it's possible when you think of the seasonal tendencies, it's down for this week and maybe the first week of August. Then we start to, believe it or not, we've been trending to form a harvest low earlier and earlier every year. And it wouldn't surprise me to form a low here. We might, you know, about a week from now, I might be to the point where it's just time to exit hedges. Not that I would proclaim to be a crazy bull at that point in time, but just maybe we're not going to sell off anymore. But for right now, the funds are still long, close to that 100,000 contracts of corn, about 70,000 contracts of beans. And today was a nice day and an even better close, but I'm going to still go on the fact that the funds are probably going to liquidate here. Maybe we hit that 590 and then go back down and sadly probably make a new low.
On the soybean side, you know, we entered in the month of August. There's talk of hot and dry weather again, which is, you know, gives us that key time frame for beans. And that's, you know, where the weather market still presumably sits. I've heard from other growers, though, that some of them here the last week or so, they're more worried about their soybean crop than they are their corn crop. Have you heard some of that as well, Dwayne?
I've heard a lot of that, especially today. A lot of people, the corn looks good, but beans are just, they were planted late, they were mudded in, you know, vice versa. Just, and maybe it's we're in that kind of ugly stage of bean development, but yeah, I've heard that from more guys. But that's also the crop that none of us can really call. I mean, I'm a producer, and until that combine rolls, I couldn't tell you what kind of beans we have out there. I can tell you up here, we need a really long growing season. They're way behind. But, you know, we get late August rains, and then all of a sudden we've got a bigger bean crop, and then we can still probably go down. Beans are the one that has a wide range in front of it yet throughout this month of August. You know, like you said, we continue to stay hot and dry. I think we can rebound back up, but boy, if we get some rain in the forecast, then you mix in this China's economy is struggling a little bit. We're starting to question how much will they really buy next year. You could take a dollar off this and be all the way down to $12 for soybeans. I don't know if we do that or not. I think the funds are completely liquidated out once we get below $12.50. And there again, then I might not be a bull, but I'd probably exit hedges at least and just go to the sidelines.
What happened with bean meal and oil today? A little bit of, a lot of spread there, a lot of strength in the meal market. Did you see anything that stood out to you today, Dwayne?
I didn't see any news that stood out to me. You know, normally when I see something like that, I'm going to hear information out of China that, you know, their crush margins are positive. Well, no, it was actually the opposite this weekend. An article I read, you know, or, you know, maybe it was the fact that this is spread unwinding. Remember when this whole started, it was palm oil going up and that had soybean oil going up. So guys were buying soybean oil and selling soybean meal, which is really the opposite of what a spread we usually do in bullish times. But if they put those on and now they're thinking, gosh, you know, all this talk about Indonesia now, they banned exports and then figured out, oh, whoops, we have too much now. So now they're trying to get rid of it. So maybe people are unwinding these oil meal spreads here. So it might not be a new trade. It might be just exiting an old trade here.
Dwayne Bussey of Bolt Marketing, our guest analyst here today on Market Talk. We'll have more of our conversation with Dwayne coming up here after the break. Looking at Monday's closing numbers, September quarter was up 15.75 at 580. December quarter up 19.5, 583.75. August soybeans up 38.5, 1473. Soybeans for November up 30.25, 1346. August bean meal up $16 a ton, 447.50. Beet oil for August down 31.601. September Chicago wheat up 11.770. December up 11.788.5. September Kansas City wheat up 19.5, 839.75. December up 19.25, 846.75. Spring wheat for September, that was also higher up 13.884. December up 12.25, 896.75. Oats for September down 10, 442.5. Meantime, we saw canola down 7.30, 795.10 on the session. We'll look at livestock closing numbers and continue our conversation with Dwayne Bussey of Bolt Marketing coming up after the break. Back with more Market Talk on the way right after this.
It's been our legacy year after year, and we're proud of our heritage. At FS, our focus has been on improving growers' profitability by developing leading products and services to advance operations. Year after year, we've been committed to pointing the way forward. So visit fssystem.com and let's get you headed towards your next success. FS, bringing you what's next.
Keeping you informed with the latest market information for your operation. This is Market Talk. Now, back to Jesse Allen.
And welcome back to Market Talk. Thanks for being with us once again. Jesse Allen with you here. Dwayne Bussey of Bolt Marketing is our guest analyst today. We'll get back to our conversation with Dwayne in just a minute. Going to talk the livestock markets for Monday's action. Also going to touch on the wheat markets and more. Taking a look at livestock actually as well. The final numbers from Monday. August live cattle up 37, 137.75. October live cattle up 35, 143.35. December live cattle 45 higher, 148.62. August feeder cattle down 225, 179.30. September down 180, 182.67. No surprise there with higher corn prices. Hogs, August down 147, 117.22. October hogs down 220, 94.12. December hogs down 27, 86.25. But far deferred hogs had a decent day. So maybe just a little profit taking there in the front month scene on Monday. All right, Dwayne Bussey, Bolt Marketing, our guest today. Let's get back to Dwayne here on Market Talk. On the wheat side, let's talk there, Dwayne. I know we have the Wheat Quality Council Spring Wheat Tour going on in the Northern Plains this week. That gets going really tomorrow and goes through the week. So we'll get a good idea what the spring wheat crop looks like. And I would have to think that may be an outlier event into the trade this week. But again, I think this comes back to the Russia-Ukraine situation is where we're seeing some of the strength. Plus, too, you know, maybe we just overdid it to the downside with the sell-off.
Oh, I think there's probably no doubt there. I mean, we've retraced this whole rally, didn't we? And, you know, the Russia-Ukraine war, the futures market is kind of a hurry up and give me a story and then give me the next story type trade. And we rallied up so sharply and then found out, oh, wait, we didn't export any wheat because our prices were too high. Now we're headed into a time to me where the Russia-Ukraine war is actually very interesting and very intense as far as we might really lose some actual global production. And now the market like doesn't care. It's just, it's an old story and the funds have completely sold off. We're having harvest here in the Northern Hemisphere, of course. So that's putting pressure on the market. I think that spring wheat tour is going to find a crop that's very delayed, but very good too. And quite a few acres planted. So we probably have a little bit more downside there, but overall, months from now, I look at wheat as actually being the first commodity to lead us higher here during the winter months because, boy, that Ukraine story there. It sounds like now I read an article that had some Russian combines now being moved in and equipment and harvesting Ukrainian wheat, which kind of makes sense. I mean, this is war. That's what happens is they literally want to take over the country. So this whole Ukrainian-Russia wheat signature deal for exports, I'm afraid it isn't going to be Ukrainian grain. It'll be Russia grain leaving. But you know, maybe the trade's just viewing it as, well, whatever, it's still grain getting out and into the public. But that's going to take a long time. So, yeah, I'm a little depressed we couldn't rally wheat higher. You know, come Saturday, there was talks of limit up wheat. And so, I mean, it's funny, up 19 to 20 is not a big day in wheat anymore, but it really isn't right now, is it?
No, it is not. It's still a good day, but maybe not as good as we thought it could have been. You know, Dwayne, on top of you being an analyst, a trader, you're a farmer as well. I'd love your perspective on this. You know, last week we got the news about the ITC case, fertilizer imports from Trinidad, Tobago, Russia. And it seems like fertilizer prices have been going down and down. I know that's another big component here in just the market trade and just our bottom lines in general. I mean, what are your thoughts as you sit back and look at fertilizer? I'm hearing a lot of producers still saying they're going to wait to see and not buy anything for some of those fall needs or next year. But I know it's still the cost of inputs, especially fertilizer, heading to 2023's crop is a big deal right now.
Yeah, it is a big deal and going to stay that way. 2023 is probably not going to be the profitable year 2020, at least was or had potential to be when prices were highest, right? But you know, Brazil never did put sanctions on Russia, and they kept buying fertilizer there. And guess what? Now we're talking about Brazil expanding acres quite largely. Now, it was still expensive fertilizer there, but they're backing off and waiting too. And like you said, we're waiting here. So I do think fertilizer prices continue to dip a little bit. Are we going to get back to pre-war levels? Absolutely not. You know, that's just, it takes time to get that. But not a fertilizer expert, but I guess what I would do is, and I think farmers are going to do this, they're going to do the same thing they normally do. They'll get into fall and they'll start booking it and feeling a little bit better about it. But I got a bad feeling at that time we might be looking at the DEES 23 corn crop price and be a little disappointed and go, geez, well, $5 just isn't the same as what it used to be. But that's usually what we deal with in agriculture, right? We don't have profits in front of us all the time. Otherwise, everyone would do it. So.
Well, another thing on the energy side, and this goes back to what's going on with Russia, the Nord Stream pipeline here today, Russia's Gazprom said they're cutting gas flows from 40% to 20% now, and as soon as Wednesday. So you think about that, natural gas, I know, is higher today. We think about here in the U.S., if we got to dry a lot of this crop this fall, what's natural gas prices going to look like? I think that's a concern as well, Duane.
That is a concern, and really that's where probably a rally comes from this fall, is the fact that Putin's probably still going to make this war kind of a war with using food and fuel as weapons, and that's probably what he's starting to do there, and also with bombing over the Odessa port. You know, I don't think he has any interest in letting any food out or gas out. And you get to this winter, Europe's going to cry pretty hard if they don't get enough electricity and gas from Russia, right? That's why some of their sanctions are already being dropped. So I hate to say it, but this is kind of playing out the way Putin actually wants. It's working in his favor. He's winning the war right now, sadly. So, yeah, we're going to have some expensive inputs here, no doubt about it. And you know, I don't think anyone really locked in propane at a good price because it was so high already as we got into this year. It's just, we're going to have to hope for a late fall, I guess, that, and a warm winter. That would help the most, but it, just when you hope for something like that, it probably doesn't happen.
Let's talk livestock here, Duane. Friday's cattle on feed report, cattle inventory numbers, cold storage numbers. We've had a chance to digest those over the weekend. I was a bit surprised that fat cattle held in with some strength here today. Feeders, you know, higher corn prices. Okay, we've seen that dynamic time and time again. But I was surprised at the strength in live cattle today, Duane.
I was too. It was great to see. I think like any bull in this market, we were just a little bit disappointed with those reports. I mean, it's still a bullish report. The inventory is dropping, you know, on feed is still at 100%, but placements were down, but they just weren't as sharp as we anticipated. I mean, there was some talk placements could be down 10%, and I didn't think we'd be that lucky, but it seems like this market is just set up for a bullish trend here, and we kind of got the reports out of the way. We sold off on the opening, and somebody was right there to buy it right away. And if you look at the commitment of traders reports, the funds have started to build a little bit more of a long position. We're starting to build a long position in feeder cattle. And, you know, the trade action really suggested that the last 2 weeks, and plus in live cattle too. It sounds weird to talk recession and then think that the cattle market can rally, but I think it can. And that goes back to hand in hand with the pork market. You know, man, our pork cutouts in that cash market is just on fire here. You see restaurants really featuring pork more, and that has to do with chicken prices being really high too. And, you know, it's just strong domestic demand right now. And exports for livestock, the beef side, are very good too. So nothing but bullish comments for me from this market. Love the way it performed today. And, you know, I think we have more of that down the line here.
And I think as well, to add on with the hog market, Duane, it just felt like those front months, some profit taking here was needed. Yeah. And you know, maybe looking to try and fill some chart gaps that we have there. But I don't know if we're going to fill those completely anytime soon.
No, but I love the fact that you brought up there are a lot of gaps in those front month hogs and kind of all over the place. So some selling off there isn't a surprise, but I would be definitely afraid to really be short the market looking at a technical point, thinking that you're going to fill some gaps because the cash market is just so high. I would just kind of stay out of that, look more at the deferred contracts maybe and see. And, you know, and then it's the same with maybe the feeders. I skipped over that a little bit. I know they, like you said, they were down today, but we're also maybe ahead of cash just a little bit there. You know, we've been anticipating all this bullish news coming, and when it didn't come in one big swoop for reports, I think we had to pull back a little bit. But yeah, the hogs, I just follow the cash and cutouts. And as long as they're strong, I think you got to stay friendly to these markets. But we were overbought and needed a correction. And I think that's all you had today. But look at the bear spread, you know, down in the front, up sharply in the back. And so, no, I think it's still a strong market.
Well, Dwayne, before we run out of time as well, any other final thoughts? We didn't touch on the Fed, the outside markets. We know we have the Fed meeting this week and expecting that 75 basis point increase. But I think the trade, for the most part, maybe has that factored in already just because it's been talked about so much.
You know, maybe we do, but it'll be interesting to see how the grain markets handle it, because we talk about it in the Fed meetings that in the past have come out when they raise interest rates exactly what we thought. Actually, the grain markets took it fairly hard, almost like it was just a sell it after the fact type thing. But you look at things like the Dow and the dollar. So the Dow has probably made their low about almost a month ago and kind of come up. And same with the dollar. We're still at a high level around that 106, but we're still off the highs. So it looks good. You look at some of those equity markets, it actually looks like maybe we've started to stabilize and maybe a big recession isn't coming. Or if a recession is coming, it's going to be very short lived, which would be good for commodities in general. But I don't know. The fact that the Fed is having a meeting this week kind of makes me think I'd rather be a bear on the grain side. It's just assuming that we sell off again. If we get through Wednesday, they raise it to 75 or half basis points and we don't fall apart, then maybe it's starting to be old news then. We'll see come Wednesday night.
We will definitely see that. Well, Dwayne, I appreciate the time as always. If folks need some advice with their marketing, I know they can reach out to you there at Bolt Marketing very easily. How can they get a hold of you?
Yeah, they can call us here directly at 605-448-2365, or they can always check us out online at boltmarketingllc.com.
With that, Dwayne Bussey of Bolt Marketing, always a pleasure, sir. Have a great week. Thanks so much, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Sounds good. Thanks, Jesse.
And again, that's Dwayne Bussey of Bolt Marketing joining us today. Find him online, boltmarketingllc.com. Coming up, we're going to take a look at the weather forecast here for the week ahead. Eric Snodgrass with Nutrien, he joins us next as we're back with more market talk on the way right after this.
The market news and analysis you need here on Market Talk. Now, back to Jesse Allen.
And joining us now to discuss this week's weather forecast, let's say hello to Eric Snodgrass of Nutrien. Eric, hope you had a good weekend, sir. How are you?
Yeah, you know, I spent all day Saturday at a 12-hour swim meet in 95-degree heat, so I had a great weekend because I wasn't in the pool, though. So, but yeah, it was a good one, and I'm glad to see these summer weekends rolling through.
I agree. I spent some time mowing the yard in 95-degree heat, which was my own choice. Lost a few pounds. We move forward from here. Eric, looking over the weekend here into this week, though, we got to talk about the rainfall that was in the forecast and the cooler temperatures. But some of this rain, it was the case of the haves and the have-nots again, wasn't it?
You know, it was. And, you know, it's interesting you bring up mowing your lawn because and this isn't an indicator of what's going on in the fields, but you know, I haven't mowed my lawn in Champaign, Illinois, since the end of June. So it's been about a month since I last put a mower over the top of it. And I'm in one of those spots where the storms will build close and then they'll break apart. And there's been a lot of folks in the Midwest that have had that similar experience. And that's the hyper local nature of thunderstorm development. And you're right. Some places that have been dry, when the storms approach, they tend to bust up. There's too much dry condition there. There's not enough moisture to recycle, and it kills them. So yeah, you have a weekend here where there were parts of Illinois, there were parts of Indiana, there were parts of Eastern Corn Belt that got rain galore, just persistent thunderstorms. And then there's other places that missed out on that. And I think that's going to be my focus going forward, because you think about parts of Iowa, parts of southwestern Minnesota, South Dakota, and Nebraska. That front slid south of them this weekend and didn't deliver the rain in those locations. And now the front's going to set up from Colorado to like Maryland, that whole narrow strip, delivering very heavy rainfall to the Ohio River Valley, parts of the southern half of Illinois, Missouri, parts of Iowa, but Kansas, southern Nebraska. That's where the rain's going to be, and it's just going to slowly slide south. So the problem is that if you're in that western and northwestern part of the Corn Belt, you didn't get the rain from the last front that came through, and now it's all south of you. And so we're going to just continue to talk about those pockets that are typically heavy hitters in producing huge amounts of corn and beans. missing out on this. So yeah, this was a pretty complicated forecast because those fronts were so slow in their movement. They were fed with plenty of moisture, but my goodness, it was a tricky weekend to kind of figure out where that front was going to be.
Well, how about moving forward here? I mean, are we going to see a chance, or are we going to see heat come back, or cool temperatures going to stick around? What are you looking at as we go through the rest of this week and get into the month of August, Eric?
Well, the heat over the next 7 days will be in Texas. It'll be in like Arkansas, Oklahoma to start the week. They're going to still see the 100, 105 degree temperatures, and it's going to be big time in the Pacific Northwest. I was looking today, Yakima, right there in the middle of the Columbia Basin, they might hit 108 Fahrenheit by the middle of this week. So the heat's all west, and the heat is down in the southern plains. But much of the Midwest, the East Coast, there's heat in the East Coast today, but it's going to move out. We're going to get some cooler weather in. So I just wanted to know, and this was the biggest struggle last week, was the pattern that was setting for the end of July and the very beginning of August going to hang on into mid-August? And it looks as though that ridge that built into the west was just a temporary feature. By the time we get to the end of this week, most of us meteorologists will be talking about that breaking down, going back over to a trough in the Gulf of Alaska, and that puts the heat squarely back into the middle part of the United States, where it's been in June and July of this year. So the rain that's coming this week is going to be critical to just buying time for folks in the midsection of the country. And those that miss out on it could go back over into a pattern where it's going to be just those ridge riding storms that come through and save the day as the heat comes back on. So it didn't completely break down. It didn't get rid of the heat risk in the midsection of the country. And we're going to be talking about it again for the next probably 45 days or so as we just slowly move toward fall. But right now, it looks as though this little pattern shift we get this week only lasts for about 5 to 7 days.
And of course, that heat and dryness is going to come back here into August. It sounds like that critical time for soybeans. And you know, Eric, I've been seeing a lot of pictures, social media, some of the areas you mentioned that missed out on the rains, and even some of the areas that are seeing the rain here this week, you know, Missouri back into Kansas. We're already seeing some pictures of pretty rough looking corn crop and potentially soybeans as well. I haven't seen as many soybean pictures, but some of that corn crop in some areas that hasn't seen the rains looking pretty rough outside of the I states, Eric.
Yeah, I mean, even within the I states, I was amazed at just my travels over the last 10 days at how often I could see down the rows of the soybean fields. In other words, like the canopy hadn't closed. I don't know if that was due to late plant or what. But it feels vulnerable when you start to see it look like that. So yeah, to bring back on heat stress and potentially drought stress in the month of August, of course, will really eat away at the potential for the crop in soybeans. And what I like to do is look at not only what the atmosphere is going to give, but what's already in the soil. And I was looking this morning in my morning report, and I put out a map that just showed current soil moisture values down to 16 inches. And you just see a lot of the lower side, that the 20 to 30% range, rather than that 50 to 80% range, which is what you'd hope for that location, any location in the Midwest to have. So yeah, it means that the heat that comes back isn't going to be undone by moisture that's already there, which means you could endure it. I think we're going to have more places dealing with some moisture and heat stress from both the atmosphere and what's not in the soil right now.
Eric, any other thoughts you want to share this week? Anything we're watching in the tropics or over in Europe, et cetera? Any other final thoughts for us?
Yeah, I think if we see the same kind of transitional pattern in the United States, we should expect another heat wave in Europe at some point. They endured a nasty one over the last 10 days. And you bring up the tropics. I had myself convinced that by the end of July, we would see some tropical activity coming off of Africa. Squashed all of that with the weekend forecast. We saw that the models did a terrible job predicting where the MJO was going to be. And us meteorologists didn't see that they were going to be wrong. So I thought we'd see some more tropical activity, but the Sahara just sent out a bunch of dust rather than any tropical systems. And as a result, I think we're going to have to just wait till we get into August before we really start talking about anything coming out of the tropics.
Well, we'll continue to watch the weather closely here at home and abroad. And of course, we appreciate the time as always with that, Eric Snodgrass of Nutrien. Thanks so much, sir. Have a great week, and we'll talk to you next week.
All right, sounds good.
And that's all the time we have for Market Talk today. Coming up tomorrow, the team from AgMarket.net. I'm your host, Jesse Allen, wishing you a fantastic rest of your day.
It's been our legacy year after year, and we're proud of our heritage. At FS, our focus has been on improving growers' profitability by developing leading products and services to advance operations. Year after year, we've been committed to pointing the way forward. So visit fssystem.com and let's get you headed towards your next success. FS, bringing you what's next.